Okay. My favorite design, ever since 1972, is wearing anything more than about 8 elements. It is my strongest recommendation that the elements be insulated from the boom. A little bit more difficult mechanically to do it, but it pays huge dividends downrange. By the time you get as long as 11 elements, unless you live in the Mojave Desert, which is nice and dry and there's no salt spray and whatever, and maybe there you can keep the aluminum shining enough that you get good aluminum-to-aluminum contact. But where you and I live on Long Island, where we definitely get salt spray, particularly in Baldwin, what will happen in some length of time is that your elements start off making beautiful contact to the boom, and that makes them a certain electrical length. Approximately 2 years downrange, you take out your ohmmeter, and you go down that string of elements, and you'll find out that one half of them are no longer making any contact to that boom. They're an open circuit between the element and the boom. When that happens, the element is now a brand new electrical length that is longer. And as such, very slowly the antenna performance does degrade, assuming it was well-tuned to begin with. So any design that where the elements, more than 8 elements, go through the boom and make a direct aluminum to aluminum contact, and aluminum oxide will build up, and you can't stop it from happening. I guess if you coat it with some really magic stuff, you can delay the process, but it's still going to happen. With the wind, rain, ultraviolet exposure, and vibration and everything else, you're going to eventually break contact. And you'll have a brand new antenna design with a slightly different standing wave ratio when that happens. So my favorite design, do not have the elements in direct contact with the boom. And that's not going to give you a problem for at least a year or so. So don't stop your current design, but do think about getting another design where the elements are insulated from the boom, where you're beyond 8 elements. That's my recommendation, Steve, if you really want all that performance to stay there for the next 5 or 10 years. I mean, every one of us puts up an antenna and we say, hey, this is a temporary installation, I'm going to change it next year. Well, some of my temporary installations that were only going to last for 6 months or a year, I am using them 10 years downrange. I'm sure a lot of us fall into that trap. So I try my darndest to build things in such a way that I own them, they don't own me. I don't have to go out there every single year and paint the darn thing because I was smart enough to use aluminum and galvanize and so on so that things are not rusting. And in the case of a Yagi antenna, elements that go through the boom is not my recommendation. It'll work like a charm at first. I think it could give you a little bit of grief downrange. That's an opinion. Okay, the next person with a question, I think, was Walt. I'm not sure if Walt said a yes or a no. I'm going to say Walt said yes. KB2, Lima, Quebec, November. You've got it, Walt. K2LIW in the deck, man.
Good evening, Dick. I think tonight is, oh my goodness, I'm getting feedback. Okay, wow. I think I'm going to have a problem here, but we'll see what happens. I don't know if you are receiving me. Are you?
Right now, you sound beautiful. There's some other piece of equipment in the shack that's obviously got some audio output giving you feedback. But right now, you sound pretty good, so go right ahead for Brooklyn, Walt.
Okay. The question is this. I guess it's an antenna night for you. Locally, I've been trying to talk to somebody, and we had a problem. I was transmitting with a vertical 2-meter, and he was using a Yagi 2-meter or a boom, and we weren't getting good reception either way. So now I know I'm doing it vertically, he's doing it horizontally, and I guess never the twain shall meet. That's part A of the question. Now, part B of the question is, that's VHF. What if we go to HF? What happens with the signals up there in the ionosphere? Are they still polarized horizontally and vertically, or what? Could you possibly give me some insight into this? Maybe 2LQN here.
Hey, you sound real good now, Walt. Yes, I think I can. And I'll start off simple and get more complicated. if I had your antenna in Brooklyn, in the world's best anechoic chamber, an antenna testing chamber, where it's got these great big pyramids on the wall, any signal hitting the wall gets absorbed and nothing reflects back. The antenna thinks it's in free space. It thinks you're doing a test outside of the space shuttle while it's in orbit, if you know what I mean. In that circumstance, if my antenna is perfectly horizontal and the guy who wants to receive me a mile away is perfectly vertical, we will be nulled from each other by at least 40 decibels. In other words, he's going to hear some signal, but it's going to be about 40 dB down in free space. Bring it down to Brooklyn, where there's reflections coming off of buildings and streets and water towers and schoolyards and fences and basketball hoops and everything else. Your pure vertical transmission and his pure horizontal reception is not quite true. Make believe you stood where your antenna is standing, and you've got a great big basket full of perfect ping pong balls that bounce without any loss. And you throw those ping pong balls randomly, all at once, a whole bag of them, in his general direction. You can see them bouncing off the walls and floors, the streets and the buildings and everything else. And all of those bouncing ping pong balls that are perfect eventually get to his house, and each bounce starts twisting things a little bit. So is he going to get a perfect no? No. And so even though you're pure horizontal and he's vertical or vice versa, you still should have some reception. If you have a reasonable pass between the two, you're transmitting a reasonable amount of power at a reasonable altitude, and he's got a reasonable receiver with reasonable sensitivity, you should hear something. So can you really get perfect cross-polarization in an urban environment? No. Without a doubt, you're better off both being horizontal and both being vertical. But the fact that you're cross-polarized should not be a showstopper. It's an attenuator, and the amount of attenuation is a big factor of what kind of jazz is in the environment between you and him. But now let's go down to HF. We all talk about the signal bouncing off the ionosphere. It doesn't really bounce. The ionosphere absorbs a certain amount of the signal and re-radiates it. But the ionosphere is always a mixture of a plasma, that means the nucleuses of those particles up there, the protons and the neutrons, are somewhat disassociated from their electrons. It's a conducting medium. That's what plasma means. But ionosphere is a plasma. You take any plasma with a weak magnetic field mixed into it, and the Earth supplies that weak magnetic field. You then get what's called Faraday rotation. You can launch a pure horizontal signal into that ionosphere. After it, quote, reflects off the ionosphere, it's really absorption and re-radiation, but after it gets through the ionosphere and comes out the other side, that signal is going to be rotated either clockwise or counterclockwise some number of turns before it goes from entering the ionosphere to exiting the ionosphere. Therefore, there is a statistical probability that your pure vertical launched signal in Brooklyn goes through the ionosphere and gets to your buddy in Ohio, and he sees a horizontal signal even though you've launched a vertical. And then you would think, okay, my vertical launch and his horizontal reception sounds great. Therefore, when he sends out a horizontal and it comes back to me, I should see vertical. Turns out that Faraday rotation is the one exception that people can easily find that violates something called the theory of reciprocity. The signal may twist clockwise 1.5 turns going from Brooklyn to Ohio. Coming from Ohio back, you would think it's going to twist back in the other direction the same number of turns. It may not. It may twist in some other direction, some other number of turns. The possibility exists that your buddy in Ohio launches a horizontal signal and you get best reception after a couple of turns through the ionosphere as a horizontal signal in Brooklyn. So if you had the best possible antenna where you could independently select horizontal and vertical by flipping a switch, and you flip back and forth and he says, boy, I hear you the best when you send vertical, even though my antenna is horizontal, and then he sends back to you, and you flip back and forth with the switch again while you're doing reception, you may find out that you get best reception from him when you're horizontal on reception, and he gets the best reception when you're vertical when you transmit. The ionosphere can do that. It'll confuse the living daylights out of you. So Polarization is a peculiar thing. As you go to higher and higher frequencies, the amount of location you get goes down real fast. But when you're on HF frequencies, there is no predicting what polarization anybody else in the world is going to get from you, unless they happen to only be a fraction of a mile away. Then they're going to get the same polarization by ground waves. But if you're using the ionosphere at all bets are off, unless you've got a lot of intelligence. Whether you're transmitting off of the D layer, the E layer, the F1 layer, the F2 layer today. Is it high noon? Is it the Terminator? Is the Earth's magnetic field strong or weak? Are we getting a solar mass expulsion today? All of these things are variables. You put it all together and mishmash it, and yeah, in theory, if you get just the right program, maybe you can predict what polarization your buddy in Ohio is going to get. It's so darn difficult to predict it. You're better off just running the experiment and say, hey, it sounds better when I launch vertical, so I'm going to talk to you on vertical. So maybe that helps a little bit, Walt. KB2L2N, KQRIW on the TechNet.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. I had a feeling that that was something like that because we were discussing it, and I said, well, I think whatever kind of radio wave you throw up there, it says, there's no way that it's going to come back exactly the same. I really don't think so. And not having the technical expertise that you have in the background, I guess I guessed right. Okay, thank you. I'm enjoying this very much, this TechNet tonight. I'll be on the side. KB2, I'll join here.
Okay, we've now got, OSR said he had no question. PNJ said he has no question. But if we give each of these guys another chance, you wait and see. Anybody out there with a question before we, before Mel and I do our usual thing and maybe we pick up Paul at the S2N if he's available. Until we do that, is there anyone else that we've missed? KQRIW in the TechNet.
P2PUI Mobile.
Okay, I think it was PUI. W2 or something like that. Papa Uniform India. Correct me on the call letters. Give me your name, and then proceed with your question, sir. Sounds like you're mobile. KQRIW, my name is Dick.
Dick, yes, I am mobile. You do have the call correct. The prefix is Whiskey Bravo 2. The name is Howie, H-O-W-I-E. I'm on the Cross Island right now. I'd like to build a Yagi, vertically polarized, for 2 meters. I have a friend, I live in Westchester County in Tarrytown, and I have a friend who lives in Rye, and we'd like to talk to each other direct rather than via repeaters. We've run a little bit of an experiment, and we found we could barely hear each other on FM, barely hear each other on sideband, but I can hear distinctly her carrier in CW. So, but we don't want to talk from CW, we want to have a rig. So I figure I need at least another 10 dB again. My situation is such that I have to take down my antennas every day. I'm in an apartment, but I do sometimes put up a vertical. And I was thinking that I'd put up a Yagi. I prefer to work with PVC, and I've got right now a 1-inch PVC pipe and a 1.5-inch PVC, not 1.5, 1.25, and they fit inside each other. So, my question to you is, can you recommend a source of designs that would give me something like maybe a 10-foot lens boom that might get me about 10 dB or so of gain that I can build myself? And I guess I'd prefer for the elements to use something like welding rod, which I can get locally, by the pound. Thank you, Dick. K2RIW and the TechNet. This is WB2PUI Mobile.
Very fine, Howie. When it comes to the elements themselves, on 2-meter Yagi, temporary light Yagi, things that you set up for the night of communicating and then take it down and take it apart and put it in the closet or put it in the trunk of the car. People have used coat hanger wire very successfully. They've used welding rods quite successfully, depending on what the welding rod is made out of and what it's coated with. They've used aluminum tubing. My favorite construction material is 3/16 diameter aluminum rod. So that's just my favorite. And my favorite method of mounting them is with some kind of bushings that insulate the elements from the boom. My favorite way of building Yagis is with aluminum tubing that telescopes, because in strength to weight ratio, you're going to get a little bit of sag and a little bit of homeliness with PVC tubing. Whereas with aluminum tubing, it can look pretty, it doesn't sag, it's lighter, and by having various lengths of aluminum tubing, a little bit more expensive to begin with, but by telescoping it and putting screws to it to hold it together, you can make a beautiful Yagi on 2 meters with aluminum tubing, where when you take it apart, it comes apart in 2, 3, or 4 individual sections that fold up into a nice little bag, maybe even into an attaché case. And you can stuff it in the closet or in an attaché case or in the trunk of the car or so on. So I'm way ahead of the game. I like the beauty of aluminum. And so I wouldn't use it over PVC. There's been some extremely successful designs with PVC or with wood, particularly in the case of wood for the guys who live in the desert areas in California. The design itself for the 2-meter Yagi, I'd like to believe that there's a couple of good designs in the ARRL antenna book. Also, if you do a web search, you're going to find a couple of pretty good designs. I can't recommend a design now. Maybe somebody's going to chime in after I stop talking and give you a page number of QST or QEX with a darn good design. But there are designs out there with coat hanger wire, with welding rods, with aluminum rod, with aluminum tubing, and so on. So finding the right design, duplicating it exactly, not too difficult. And where you've got a temporary setup there, and by the way, with your temporary setup, there's nothing wrong with you and your buddy, you at your apartment on the balcony setting up a horizontally polarized antenna, and him setting up horizontal. And then when you want to talk to the repeaters, you rotate the whole Yagi in its mounting structure and make it vertical and then aim it at your favorite repeater. So there's various ways you can do that. So don't give up on horizontal polarization when it comes to you and your buddy talking to each other. With the two of you using Yagis on both ends, you're going to hear a hell of a lot more signal. So your marginal weak signal now is going to become a lot stronger. And you've always got the possibility of adding a 180-watt afterburner running off a 12-volt power supply in your apartment. So there's lots of ways of making the signal stronger. Once you've got the Yagi, and if you're living in a metro area, there's a chance you'll discover that there's some favorite building. In the old days, on 10 gigs, we used to have a lot of fun reflecting signals off the World Trade Center. I would aim dead west out here from Huntington to the World Trade Center, reflect the signal off that building, and my buddy would be due south in New Jersey, aim dead north to the World Trade Center, and the mutual reflection between us was that building. Now the World Trade Center is gone, but you can use the Empire State Building and the Chrysler Building and so on. Once you've got the Yagi, which allows you to squirt that signal like a flashlight, and you and your buddy start doing some experiments, there's a 50-50 chance you're going to find a great building that you and he can aim at, and you get some tremendous signals that you've never heard before. So it's going to be a fun experiment in building the antenna, tuning the antenna, aiming it at your buddy, seeing stronger signals, discussing what you've done today versus last week and so on, and how much stronger the signal strength meter is showing you today with the changes in propagation and the changes in reflection of the building and the way you're aiming it and so on. So it could be a very fun project, Howie. Even though I haven't yet told you where to go, I know there's some websites and I know there's some good literature you can get your hands on that will give you portable Yagi designs. And the guys who do mountain topping operations on 10 gigs all use 2-meter Yagis that they disassemble, put in the trunk of the car, but it becomes the talkback circuit, the liaison circuit. On 2 meters, they get on during the 10-gig contest and say, is anybody on 10 gigs within 100 miles of me? They're making this announcement on 2 meters. If so, answer me now. Tell me what frequency you're on 10 gigs. Tell me where you're located. I'll aim the dish at you, and we'll do a QSO. That scenario takes place a couple of hundred times on the East Coast during a 10-gig contest. So those designs and those antennas that those guys are using is what I think is exactly what you're looking for. W2PUI Mobile, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Net, tonight at 8 o'clock.
W2PUI. Well, very good. Thank you, Dick. All right, I will switch my priority to aluminum tubing. I'm sure I can get something from Texas Towers. I've seen their advertisements in the back of QST, and if not, I know MFJ is now selling aluminum tubing, so I'll think in terms of aluminum tubing, and maybe I'll buy a newer edition of the ARRL handbook. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time you've devoted to me. Please continue with the net. K2RIW, this is WB2PUI, Howie, Mobile, now in the Bronx.
Mel recognized. Howie, you want the ARRL antenna book, not handbook, ARRL antenna book. When it comes to aluminum tubing, I guarantee you can get it in Home Depot, Walmart. The diameters of aluminum tubing you're looking for, you don't have to go anywhere near as far as Texas to get that shipped all the way up here. You will find aluminum tubing a hell of a lot closer if you go to the right well-equipped hardware store. Let's see what Mel's got to suggest. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Just going to suggest to Howie that I built the portable, you know, the version of it out of the ARRL book. Came out of the 19th edition of the antenna handbook on high performance, the Yagis they have for 144, 222, and 432. And, of course, I take that for field day, so it comes easily apart, and they give you designs for how many elements, up to 20 elements, pick over.
Yeah, you find the right article, Howie, you're going to discover that some, particularly the Gunter Huck design, the DL6WU design, his designs are extremely forgiving. He may give you a design for a 22-element antenna, and this is the only Yagi I know of where you can build 19 elements, 17 elements of it, 15 elements of it, 13 elements of it, 9 elements of it, and you get the performance you're supposed to get. He's got a very forgiving design. There are some Yagi designs where you add extra elements or subtract some of the elements, and the thing starts degrading real fast. Not the Gunter Huck design. And quite possibly what Mel is telling you about is a ARRL antenna book design that is following that philosophy. Is that true, Mel? Go ahead.
Exactly. Here it is. Free space dimensions for 144 Yagi, number of element number, and they go all down through the line to 17 elements. They give you the position on the boom and the element length one by one. Very simple to follow, very straightforward. They give you, the elements, what are they using? Basically, I could say they give you, you can buy the tubing, peak tubing. I made it out of, I used pieces of copper pipe. I had a lot of small pieces I was able to pick up because, it's a short length, no problem picking it up. And here they recommend the half-inch diameter water pipe, of any sort, it can be copper, whatever. But I use it for field day. I take it every year for field day. It goes together within 15 minutes. So I think this would be ideal for him to take over.
Okay. So a little bit of research. Copper is a nice, inexpensive material. And if you substitute aluminum for copper, copper for aluminum, on an insulated Yagi design, electronically, it'll work like a charm. I like aluminum because it's one-half the weight of copper, maybe one-third the weight, and it doesn't tarnish. If you buy the right 6061 T6 aluminum alloy, it'll stay pretty looking for 10 years. Where copper does tarnish and looks a little bit homely, even if you shine it up with steel wool and cover it with varnish, it still starts changing color. Some people like that patina of copper, so it's your choice. And copper is a lot heavier. I like my antennas to be disassemblable when it comes to this service, where you take the pieces of aluminum tubing, the telescope together, you remove the screw, you untelescope them, you fold them all up side by side, and you can put them into a very small structure, if that's what you'd like to do, and it sounds like you would. Okay, Mel, you got the floor. What have that crazy group of guys in Manhattan Beach, are you keeping an eye on them? What have they been doing for the last week? And are they getting ready for another shootout? Have some of them come back from the, why can't I think of the name of Dayton, Ohio? I think the Dayton Hamfest has come and gone. I'm not sure. I think it has. And I guess I'm hearing stories of people standing on long lines to use the porta potties and things like that. Maybe there wasn't enough of them. And maybe the person I was listening to was describing a previous year when the crowd was very, very large. And maybe it wasn't like that this year. So over to you, Mel. K2KEY, KQRIW.
Hey, this is K2KEY, yeah. I've sort of busy myself and had a, quite a number, I could say, email businesses quite well, doing quite well on questions about all of the above. And as far as Dayton goes, I don't know of anybody who went from the club, really. I'll get all the information at our next meeting in June, which, of course, will be a big discussion, and most of the ham clubs will be the upcoming field day. In fact, I just alluded to the fact that I have a number of portable antennas that I put together because, you know, everything for field day is basically got to be quickly installed, quickly taken apart, you know, and easily in both directions, you know, to get it going and to remove it. So I have a number of beams. I have beams for the 2-meter beam, the 6-meter beam, and the 432, which is that quag eye I showed you, that quaggy type design. Very neat design for 432. Works quite well. And in fact, all the designs basically did come out of the ARRL handbook, the 19th edition of the ARRL antenna handbook. Must specify that. Now, as far as questions, how many antenna questions would you like to KQRIW?
My favorite subject, Mel, so start firing away.
Oh, again, I got a number of queries about this new thing, this CCD antenna, this dipole. Is it worth purchasing them? I went to the site, I took a quick look at this thing, and the claims and everything, and, you know, the design and whatnot, and I have never used one, and I don't know of anyone, I haven't bumped into anyone yet that is using one. So I thought maybe, as I suggested, listen to the TechNet, maybe you or somebody on the TechNet has, in the past, tried either homebrewing one or using, well, I believe this is the first guy to come up with the commercial version of it, but I believe the design has, you know, been around for a few years. So I thought maybe you've had some experience some way or another, or in the past with the CCD antennas, Dick, over.
Yeah, I think you guys told me last week that the website was ccdqrz.com, and I just went there, and server has not been found, so maybe you're going to have to give me a little bit better addressing on this one.
It's ccdantennas.com, ccdantennas.com, Dick, over.
Okay, I'm dialing it in right now. Stand by. Okay, I got it. CCDantennas.com. Controlled current distribution. And if I understand correctly, I seem to remember you've got a whole lot of loading capacitors. Yes, yes, yes. So it allows you to make what I would call a kind of a collinear antenna. So there's a whole bunch of distributed capacitors along the length of the wire. Therefore, you can make the wire longer. Therefore, you end up with higher gain. That's the good news. But you're starting to make a something closer to a pancake pattern. So assuming that you set it up so that it gives you this extra gain broadside to the wire, and your wire is properly oriented, so if the broadside is toward the guy you want to work, that can work very nicely. But if the antenna is not rotatable, the gain can give you some problems. I mean, as you start squirting into a narrower and narrower flashlight pattern, so to speak, all that extra gain of the flashlight, if it's not aimed at the target, it's not going to give you much brilliance, if you know what I mean. Maybe I'm misunderstanding that. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, now you'll notice that antenna, it's a full wavelength, whichever band you have to pick it out, that you want to purchase, it'll make it. Now you see a formula that gives you, somewhere in that article, it gives you a formula for determining how many capacitors, what value, depends on value, pick out how many capacitors along each line, and he's telling, he tells your kids, I mean, still tell you, you know, these little plexiglass plates that mount the batteries on all these 5 points from one piece of element, one wire element to the next. So if you're looking over, I don't know. I don't know much about it. All I see is, you know, that whatever I glimpsed that real quick is that I noticed that they are full wavelength dipoles take over.
Okay, if I compare a half wavelength dipole to a full wavelength dipole, no matter what fancy things I do to control the distribution of current along the dipole, I'm not going to get 10 dB more gain. The only way an antenna gives you gain is that in some direction it has a more narrow beam width. I mean, you've got a certain number of watts that you're putting into an antenna. And make believe your antenna starts off as a light bulb, which is an omnidirectional radiator, in the middle of a spherical room. So if I've got a 100-watt light bulb, and if my room is at the right diameter so that it's got 100 square feet of area to this spherical room, by definition, I'm going to get 1 watt per square foot on this 100 square foot room from that 100 watt light bulb. Now if I start putting a reflector on the light bulb and making it a more narrow beam width, I can now squirt my signal to the east if I want to by subtracting the signal I would have transmitted to all other directions. That's the only way an antenna has gain, is it subtracts the signal from some direction and puts it into a more desirable direction. When you go from a half-wave dipole, which usually has about a 78-degree beam width, and you go to a full-wavelength dipole, you're going to narrow up the beam width somewhat. I don't know what the exact number is, but I'm going to pick a number out of the air and assume it's a 60 degrees. So you've now got a 60-degree beam width where you used to have a 78, and maybe it's a 55-degree beam width. And so you're developing a more pancake-like pattern if you could look at it in three-dimensional space. And as long as your wire is properly oriented so that that increased gain is in the direction of your buddy, he's going to see a slightly stronger signal. But how much extra gain do you get from going from half wave to full wave? Almost everything I know tells me you're going to have a devil of a dog, a job getting beyond 3 dB. So this very elaborate procedure is giving you 3 dB of extra gain. You would have also gotten 3 dB of extra gain if you took a pair of half wave dipoles and mounted them side by side, and they're ordinary dipoles without these zillion capacitors. Which is the better way to go? It pays your money, it takes your choice. Each has its advantages and disadvantages. When it comes to pure complication, the CCD is a little bit more on the complicated side. But does it have any great magic where it can give you a zillion dB of extra gain? The answer has got to be no, because you don't get gain without investing in real estate, antenna real estate. So a full wavelength, twice as much length, is not going to give you much more than 3 dB of gain increased capability. He may be claiming great big numbers beyond that. I haven't read far enough yet. And if he does, until somebody really confirms it with a shootout like you guys do there in Brooklyn, I won't quite believe it yet. But maybe I'm jumping the gun on this one, Mel. K2KEY, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Well, this is the point for the questions that have been coming in. I've got a number of them. Is it worth the investment to purchase this dipole over just putting up a full-wave dipole? Is there any advantage to this idea that he puts these capacitors along a full-wave dipole? You know, what are you gaining besides something that's going to look kind of unusual off there, I guess. It looks like a lot of beats that get strung out, whatever. And that seems to be the question. Is it worth the purchase because of the difference I'm going to see? In other words, they all want to know, will I see a difference in this dipole over my half-wave dipole? And if I change my half-wave dipole to a full-wave dipole and then put up this antenna again, like you say. I don't know. That's it. I don't know the answer to these questions because I guess like you said just now that you'd have to do a side by side some kind of AB type of test. But if you read on, the claims there are, you know, is there any possibility being that your past experience that anything of this such could accomplish some of these feats that he is claiming over?
Before I read any further, did he make any gain increased claim? Does he claim it's got 3 dB more gain in some direction compared to a half-wave dipole melt? Go ahead.
Just peruse over it real quick and have a heck of a lot of time to help with the depth of each thing, but I believe there is some part. He claims that also a lot of band coverage, very broadband antenna, with a good flat response across the band. And I believe he's making some claims that is superior to any dipole that you could possibly come up with, Dick Over.
Okay, there he's got a possibility of a claim that its natural standing wave ratio across the band is a little bit better than without these distributed capacitors. I'm going to give him that capability. And is that worth fighting for with all that extra method of construction as opposed to using a good antenna tuner? It's another darn good comparison question type thing. If I've got a well-performing antenna tuner, and if I've got reasonably low insertion loss transmission line between that tuner and the antenna, under those circumstances, my antenna could have a standing wave ratio as high as 10 to 1. And the antenna tuner takes it all back out, down to close to 1 to 1, and the transmitter is happy. There's a little bit of extra loss in the feed line, and particularly if you use an open wire line, which starts off with an extremely low loss to begin with, I could have a 10 to 1 standing wave ratio with open wire line feeding it. And I've got a 10 to 1 standing wave ratio because the antenna is tuned to 3.5, and for some reason I want to use it at 4.2. I'm a Mars member, we'll say. The antenna is peaked at 3.5, and at 4.2 megacycles when I'm on a Mars frequency, in my theoretical discussion here, the antenna VisWire goes up to 10 to 1. And with open wire feed, who cares if the signal is bouncing back and forth 50 times before it gets radiated? My antenna tuner takes it all back out, and my transmitter at 4.2, instead of seeing a 10 to 1 VisWire, sees a 1.05 VisWire. That antenna that I just described would not be violating any laws of physics if it had 98% efficiency. I put 100 watts into it, and 98 watts gets radiated to space. That is possible. So, should I invest in a good antenna tuner as opposed to building all these little extra capacitors along the antenna just to get more bandwidth? Again, you'll have to make your choice on that. It's not clear which way is more fun. With the distributed capacitor antenna, you got a little bit more bragging rights. You got a brand new antenna, and you can talk to people about it, and they'll say, gee, you're one of those guys that's pushing the envelope and doing brand new things, as opposed to us old-fashioned guys that are using an antenna tuner. So you may have some fun out of that. It's a good experiment. But it can't have a zillion dB more gain. It can't have 10 times more bandwidth, because you haven't invested in the real estate. If I put a pair of half-wave dipoles end-to-end, and I feed them in the center, think about that. Yes, I'll get a beautiful, more narrow pattern, depending on how I feed them. The nice thing about half-wave dipoles is when you feed the end of a half-wave dipole, it's an extremely high impedance, which gives you all kinds of capabilities to have some fun. If I feed the two half-wave dipoles that are end-to-end, and I feed them in a co-phase manner, with a local grounding rod, I probably could do that, particularly if it's on the top of a building. I could feed the two co-phase. I would be making a null broadside, and plus or minus roughly 45 degrees, I'd have a great big peak. And then if I flip over a switch and feed them differentially in the center, the two half-wave dipoles, I now have a very strong pattern broadside, and where I used to have peaks at 45 degrees, I've got a partial null out there. So electronically, I can tune the pattern by having a pair of half-wave dipoles side by side with a fancy switching network in the way I feed them in the center of the pair. So there's lots of ways you can have some fun here. When you distribute the current, as he's describing, with these capacitors, so the current is more constant along the antenna, as opposed to the usual sinusoidal distribution of current magnitude versus distance. Normally, a half-wave dipole has the maximum current in the center, and the current falls off as a sine wave and goes to zero current at the tips of a half-wave dipole. At the tips of a half-wave dipole, no current flows, even though you've got a lot of voltage out there. in the center of the half-wave dipole, the voltage along the wire is very low, but the current is very high. So that's the normal distribution. And when you go to this distributed technique where the current is a little bit more constant along the wire, and the wire could be a full wavelength long instead of a half wave, it's going to give you a little bit more gain. My gut feel is if you push it to the limit, you can get 3 dB more gain out of it. And so, is it worth all the effort? Not clear. It's almost like asking the question, will I be happier if I marry a redhead or a blonde? In both cases, there's quite a few more variables involved than first meets the eye. I ain't sure. K2KEY. Maybe you are. K2RIW. Time for a shootout, Mel.
Say what I think.
All right. Maybe we can get a comment from somebody that has had experience with it. Well, the other part of the question was from one person. He said, the design that he gives you, he does give you a formula for a design. You feed in the frequency and you feed in the condenser values that you want to use. And it tells you how many have got to be put along the line. And the question was, do you look for one with more capacitance or less capacitance? What is the optimum number of capacitance? I don't know. I really don't know the answer to this. There's a formula, I guess they fit for any values you want to work up, whatever you want to feed the frequency in and put the condenser values that you're going to use, and it comes out with a whole design there of how many feet, how many capacitors, the whole business. So if you look at the, you have to look a little closer at the article, whether or not all this, is going to make any phenomenal difference, I have no idea. All right, there was a patient that was just then wanted to make a comment, so maybe he had experience with it. Take your RIW in the tech that this is, KEY.
Yeah, that was Fred, K1, Fred Cunningham, K1FC. I believe he's the technical director for his particular ham radio club in Stanford. So, Fred, what if you have some experience with this antenna? Do you like it? You got it, Fred.
No, I was doing a quick lookup. I had never heard of the antenna. However, Subic has a whole big write-up where he did his extensive analysis using NEC4 and all that. And looking at it very quickly, I didn't have time to go and read it in, minute detail. It looked like an awful lot of extra work for a very, very small potential benefit. It does not look at all worth the effort. It is right up on the site. You got the one circumstance or a fraction of a dB, 7/10 of a dB or so. I mean, it looks like a lot of work, and it doesn't look too promising, but I just wanted to mention that he does have a big write-up to add an analysis. Only they did, KWFC.
Yeah, Mr. Sebick has had, is it C.E. Sebick or something like that is his name? I keep forgetting his call letters. He's a guy who lives in Foreland, and he has spent the last 10 years of his life doing some extremely expensive modeling of Yagi-like antennas, among other kinds. And he's done an extremely good job of this. In other words, he's used the latest and the greatest of all the antenna modeling programs. He's very skilled at that. And I can tell he's spent thousands of man hours of modeling antennas. And Mr. Sebick, I think, is an awful good guy, very intelligent guy. He and I only differ in one spot. And by the way, we haven't spoken face-to-face. The one spot where he and I have a difference in philosophy is that he has put a tremendous amount of effort into attempting to design a Yagi-like antenna which has minuscule or zero SIBOs. And everything I know about the laws of physics tell me that there is no benefit in seeking an antenna with zero SIBOs when it comes to a long Yagi. That if you succeed in doing that, and he's come very close with some of his very elaborately modeled designs, you sacrifice gain, you end up with increased beamwidth when you do that. And maybe for a radar-like installation where you don't want any side lobe showing up, which could give you phony targets on your radar screen, maybe there's a benefit to that antenna. but we amateurs usually want the most bang for the dollar. We want the most amount of gain in the bore sight. And when you do that, it is my strong belief, I can't prove it, but my very strong belief tells me that when you tune a long Yagi for maximum gain, the first side lobe will be 17 and a half dB down. The second side lobe will be 22 dB down. Third side lobe will be 27 dB down. These are the numbers that were derived zillions of years ago by the optical people when they do a diffraction-limited telescope design. When you've got a lot of wavelengths to play with an aperture that is uniform in its distribution, and that's what a parabolic reflector type telescope is. Those are the airy disk numbers. Those are the side lobes you end up with, and the laws of physics dictate that maximum gain, maximum performance will give you those side lobes. And then whatever effort you put into eliminating those side lobes is going to sacrifice the performance. So there's one place where Mr. Siebeck and I disagree. Other than that, I think he's done a darn good job. I think all of his predictions are extremely accurate. I just don't agree with his philosophy of optimization of long Yagi. And so if he's modeled it and come to the conclusion it's got very little gain, I think there's a 95% chance that that's the story. I get the impression you sort of feel that way also, Fred. K1 Friendly Candy, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Kentucky Waterfront Chicken is what I'm usually called. It doesn't look to me, as you said, you can't get around the laws of physics on this thing, and your benefits are marginal for the amount of work it takes to build one off of them. I know some of the other areas he's done a lot of work, though, that I've found interesting, the MOXON antenna, and I don't know if he's ever done anything with that. I've done some modeling. And, by the way, after I have improved my feed light analysis program, I don't know if you've looked at it lately, I'm going to have to back out. I'll turn it over to Bell. K1FC.
Okay, thank you. This is K2KDY. All right, so I guess the jury, as they say, is out on the CCD antenna so far. Pick over.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that I would personally put a lot of effort into it. It's an interesting design, but everything I know about the way half-wave and full-wave and one-and-a-half-wave dipoles behave leads me to believe there's not very much magic here. I don't think there's enough magic to put forth all the effort. But then again, I haven't done it. I haven't been there. I'm telling you from my point of understanding of 30-some-odd years of tuning and building antennas. That doesn't make me an expert. It just makes me a guy with a fair amount of experience who's developed a lot of opinion. And so you listen to the opinion and you chew it around and decide you agree or disagree and go build a piece of working hardware that shows us something else. So, back to you, Mel, and you can discuss that one further or go to the next one. It's your choice, sir.
Hey, Roger, this is K2KDY. I can say we'll leave it for the time being. I'm sure there'll be more people that will come aboard in the next months to come. Most likely, I'm sure, people out there, their curiosity is going to get the better of them and decide they're going to put such a thing together and see what happens. Because, you know, the claims, until you're really, like you say, until you're really experienced, you're not sure whether or not all of a sudden somebody's going to come out of, all of a sudden out of left field and, like you say, defy the laws of physics or from what you have experienced over all the years. I always have an open mind. I'll say that much. I looked at a lot of different things and I say, gee, maybe yes, maybe no. But I saw a lot of things that when they finally were produced and the kinks were taken out, I say, gee, that's amazing. And I can tell you a couple of antennas, such as the Step IR. I fooled with somewhat similar ideas with I built once a dipole and used a method. I used a motor from a they used to raise the antenna on an automobile. You know, used to have the broadcast antennas and motor that drove it up and down. shoot that plastic rod out in the reel and push the element out. So I got that idea, gee, why can't I build a dipole and just adjust the length of the dipole for whatever the frequency, so to need a tuner. And basically, they just took it a little step further. Never thought much of pursuing it, so it shows you that it was an idea that was right there for somebody to really, you know, develop. Another, you want another antenna question, or?
Yeah, and by the way, that stepper IR, step IR antenna, beautiful piece of hardware. Except for some minor glitches people have run into with the motors themselves or the wiring to those motors. The idea is that you can carefully tune the length of the elements for various bands and make it fire forward in, or the reverse direction. Within a couple of seconds, you go from forward to reverse, even though your antenna rotator would take 30 seconds to get there. You can get there in about 2 or 3 seconds with the stepper IR. So, very nice piece of engineering. I like it. Back to you, Mel.
Well, I never got that far to build, you know, a beam type of version of it. I built a dipole, and the fact it was for 10 meters, and the whole idea was so I could build the, you know, CW portion of the band was 10 meters many years ago, the hot band. I used it briefly, and I figured out a couple of setups, you know, those motor setups from the scrapyard where my brother was manager of scrapyard. I said, gee, give me a couple of those. From cars, and he says, what are you planning on building now? I'm going to make an amateur radio antenna out of it. And, it worked quite well, but I never got to the point where I computerized it or anything, or tried to make a multi-element antenna of any sort out of it. So I guess I could say there's always something new on the horizon. You know, I've also got a lot of questions. We started a little bit of a controversy last week. We were talking about vertical. And there seems to be a number of horror stories with verticals. In fact, one of them is a fairly local person, and he's going to come back from his vacation. And I told him I'll take a look at this vertical, because, again, a number of people have said the same thing, that the dipole has outperformed a number of these commercial verticals. And I'm not talking about any one make. I'm talking about several makes. And they've all said that they have had a horror story. In fact, one told me, he said, he was able to, at the, he had so many contacts back and forth with the manufacturer of the antenna and different suggestions and all, and he finally met up with them at a ham fest that they were displaying the antenna, and he controlled the guy, the antenna representative for the company, to come back to his QTH, which he said wasn't too far, and he said he had him look it over. He said, I can get anything you want to measure it, tell me what I'm doing wrong, where it is and everything, and he just looked, and they made tests, and then they made contacts back and forth, and he says, finally, he says, we'll give you a refund if you want, or a credit, or whatever you want. He says, I just can't come up with any answer to this situation, why a dipole will outperform our vertical in what we consider, you know, the right installation, Dick. So I've got a number of these different people that have also mentioned that they have also gone through the same situation. In fact, the last one, he says, before I rip it down and throw it out, it's fairly new, it's less than a year old. He says, if you want, come and take a look at it, see what's wrong with it, yeah, anything you don't want. If you think you can do something with it, fine. If not, if you want to take it down, you can have it. Again, a commercial vertical takeover.
Yeah, in theory, if you've got really good soil, like you live on a beachfront and you've got nice salty soil, and you've properly installed the radial, and you've got no land blockages nearby, no buildings nearby per se, of any substantial mass to them that's going to interfere with your HF signals, in theory, a vertical ground plane antenna mounted at the ground gives you a very low angle of radiation down to the horizon. It's supposed to give you some pretty strong DX signals. Well, you start getting into real local soil, real local environments where the guy is not on the top of the mountain, but he's in a little bit of a valley. He's got nearby commercial structures, like the first guy who signed in tonight, Rich KC2LZY. And in that environment, a gold-plated, perfectly installed ground plane antenna on the ground could be a lot of dBs lower in performance than $2 worth of dipole that's held up at some altitude. In dollars per performance per dollar, it is awful hard to beat a dipole at a reasonable altitude. Very hard to beat it. Until you start getting into Yagi, you're not going to beat it by much. Now, the ground plane antenna, if you've got the resources, like a good telescoping mast or a nice Roan tower, and you can take your ground plane and mount it at some altitude, now you're going to get the best of a couple of worlds. You can flip back and forth between your horizontal dipole and the vertical ground plane, both of them that are a nice high altitude, clear the local terrain. In that case, you don't give a darn what the ground conductivity of the soil is. In that case, you're going to have an extremely interesting experiment. But because these ground plane antennas, in some cases, are quite pricey, beautiful-looking, shiny pieces of aluminum with all kinds of doodads on the side for matching structures and floating coils and whatever, it looks like $1 million. It looks like it should really be a rock crusher of an antenna. Well, in many cases, it ain't got that much magic, even though you spent a lot of dollars. A lot of us want to believe when you buy something that's expensive, you bought the top of the line. You may have bought the top of the line of that class of antenna, but is that class of antenna in your backyard going to give you all that extra performance? I don't think so, in a lot of cases. So, when in doubt, start off with a dipole first, and you've got an awful good basis for comparison for an A-B test. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Yeah, Roger, this is K2KEY. Well, this one, K, yes, it's a pricey vertical.
Yes, they give up.
Most likely the most expensive, possibly one of the whole crop of them. And they're constantly advertising in the magazine, constantly giving all kinds of testimonials and all. And this person did go all out, install it really, opened up many a time to install it as properly. Went ahead, they even said that they have an enhanced type of radial kit that they sell, and went ahead and bought that.
Sounds like me.
They had a special mount that you can tilt it over to make it so you can do certain, you know, minimum adjustments, which they don't describe that you do any adjusting, but if you have to do any kind of work on it, or in case of maybe you want to put it down while you go away on vacation because of a storm problem, they got a fancy bunch of fancy doodads, like you said, and his problem, he bought a multi-band dipole. The multi-band dipole, it's not even installed really way up there. I mean, it's installed up about 35, maybe 40 feet up and all. And this vertical is standing out in the open, and it's a good location, I know. And yes, I compare it. He says, I'll work the X with it. I'll work the locals. I'll work it. They all think I kicked on the amplifier. So I got a number of these. Not particularly of this particular antenna that I'm talking about now, but other makes that I'm making also with the vertical, I could say, a beautiful piece of pipe, shining things and all. And yet, a number of them have said that their dipole, they were amazed that their dipole has been constantly a better performing antenna, both receiving and transmitting, over and over again, to the point where they've all given up on these vertical things. And it's hard to understand because they are installing the additional radial kits. And one guy, I remember last week, he told me he put down 36 radials and has a nice open yard in a good location where he considers the 360 degrees with nothing but one family home and in all directions, and I could say buried all these radios and everything. He said everything, he says, exactly, he says, to the letter of the law, and yet he says for some reason I cannot get this thing, it's a 20 meter vertical, to outperform the basis, my straight four dipole sprung up in the tree. So I don't know. I have no answers for this.